Welcome back to this week's edition of the Midweek Reality Check with Michael Pinto, where I try to keep Wall Street and your money real.
The economic data has become very mixed lately, as opposed to being more on the negative side in previous quarters. On the one hand, the labor market continues to cool off. U.S.-based employers announced 57,727 cuts in November. That was a 3.8% increase from the 55,597 cuts announced 1 month prior. It is up 26.8% from the same month in 2023, according to a report released by Challenger, Gray, and Christmas. Now, according to the November non-farm payroll report, the unemployment rate rose to 4.2% from 4.1%. And there was a 355,000 loss of jobs, job losses, in the household survey. The November three-month average headline payroll number is an increase of 173,000 jobs per month. For comparison, back in March of this year, the three-month average in job growth was for a robust, or much more robust, 267,000 net new jobs created each month. The October payroll number was revised only slightly higher to 36,000. Remember, it was supposed to be I think it was 22,000. It's because of hurricanes and strikes, but it was only revised up to 36,000. So October was a horrible month. While the November headline figure did come in headline in the establishment survey for 227,000. Now, the labor force contracted by 193,000. The labor force participation rate, which measures the share of the working age population either at work or looking for a job, declined to 62.5%. We have a slowing jobs market, but there is no recession yet in the labor market data, at least according to the establishment survey. The closing of the border on September 27th has shut off the massive flow of illegal immigrants into the U.S., and that is what I believe has helped cool off the labor market. On the other hand, the immediate future looks a bit brighter when it comes to the all-important small business sector. The National Federation of Independent Businesses, their optimism index, Small Business Optimism Index, rose by 8 points in November to 101.7. And that is after 34 consecutive months of remaining below the 50-year average of 98. This reading in November was the highest since June of 2021. Of the 10 optimism index components, 9 increased, none of them decreased, and so one was unchanged. And that was following last month's record high of 110. The uncertainty index declined 12 points in November to 98. So the optimism's up, the uncertainty is down. And this is what the NFIB had to say about it. The election results signal a major shift in economic policy, leading to a surge in optimism among small business owners. This is according to the chief economist there, Bill Dunkelberg. Main Street also became more certain about the future business conditions following the election, breaking a nearly three-year streak of record high uncertainty. Business owners are particularly hopeful for tax reductions and reduced regulation policies that favor strong economic growth, as well as a relief from inflationary pressures. And in addition, small business owners are eager now. They're suddenly eager to expand their operations, according to the NFIB. The net percentage of owners expecting the economy to improve rose 41 points from October to a net 36%, the highest since June of 2020. This component had the greatest impact on the overall increase in the optimism index. In addition to the growing optimism of small businesses, we continue to have credit spreads that are extremely tight and financial conditions that are easy and getting even easier. Nevertheless, the health of the consumer is very dependent on the rate of inflation. The inflation report for November came out this morning and showed that the headline consumer price index increased by 2.7% year over year, which is up from 2.6% from October. It's a slight increase, but it's still higher. The month-over-month increase was 0.3%, which was the highest month-over-month increase in the past 7 months. And core inflation was even higher, rising by 3.3% year-over-year. Now, of course, the Fed used to love quoting the core rate number, ex food and energy, when energy prices were soaring because it made the headline number more palatable. But when core prices are higher than than the headline, as they are now, they tend to bury the figure. The Fed continues to cut short-term interest rates, even though the level of prices has already severely hampered the purchasing power and living standards of the middle class. So it's the level of inflation that matters. But in addition to that, the rate of change of the CPI remains higher than the Fed's asinine 2% target, and the pace of increase is actually moving further away from 2%. In fact, inflation has been above 2% for the past 43 months. Yet Powell is in a rate-cutting cycle. Oh, and by the way, we have an historically low unemployment rate. The Atlanta Fed GDP model has fourth quarter GDP growth at 3.3%, and the stock and the real estate market remain in a massive bubble. So this begs the question, why? Why, Mr. Powell? Why are you in a rate cutting cycle at all? I mean, given the data, he should be hiking rates. And there is only one answer, only one logical answer, because the national debt is financed by T-bills, short-term debt in the money markets, and the Fed funds rate directly affects the T-bill rate. And since the Treasury cannot afford to pay $1 trillion per year in interest on the national debt, the Fed is cutting the overnight lending rate. And that's it. There is no other logical reason for him to even think about cutting rates right now. There's simply a lot of conflicting information out there. And please don't forget that this bipolar data exists in the context of record credit, equity, and real estate bubbles. I remind you about these bubbles almost every week, but it is imperative to hammer home the point that the average rate of return over the next decade is below zero. It's negative, according to history, when the market is this expensive. But I believe the average return, negative over 10 years, doesn't really tell the whole story. I mean, the average tells a deceiving story, as a matter of fact. What is most likely to occur is a thundering crash somewhere in the middle of the next decade, and then a violent rebound. That is what most likely is going to happen. That is what's happened in the past. And we can debate on how violent that rebound is, if it ever gets back to even, but the point of the matter is that there's going to be a significant crash, probably between 30, 50, or north in the next decade, north of 50%, could be as much as 80%, and then it'll be of a pretty violent rebound. So think about the difference in returns possible between a buy and hold strategy, one that's going to average negative 0.05% over the next decade each year, or one that tries to trade the dynamic of the boom-bust cycle. What we do, you know, what are we going to do with all this information when it comes to trading the portfolio? We have a dangerously inflated market, and that means that we require a bit of caution. However, the internal and arcane components of the market convey an atmosphere of relative calm. Meanwhile, there is a lot of optimism about Trump's second term. Hence, we continue to squeeze out the remaining enthusiasm left in this bull market, but we do so carefully with hedges and a high level of short-term and high-yielding government debt. The economy is in sector two, which is reflation and accelerating growth, but only marginally so, and I believe tenuously so. In such an environment, we must also own growth equities and economically resilient equities, along with a small allocation to commodities, and that does include some gold. I firmly believe that time is quickly arriving for at least a short-term correction in stocks to occur, most likely in January. If this is indeed corroborated by the stochastic components of the IDEC model, inflation, deflation, economic cycle model, we will reduce our exposure to equities sometime between Christmas and the new year. That's what I think I'm going to do. But if it's not corroborated by the model, I won't do anything. Whatever is the case, this is the worst time in history to put your portfolio on autopilot. Please do not forget that our aspiration is to short the market near the top. Not going to get the top. I guarantee you I'm not going to get the day the market tops. I can guarantee it. But we're going to try to capture at least a big part of the enormous downside that is going to be concomitant with the grand reconciliation of asset prices. My hands remain firmly on the wheel.
Thank you so much for listening to this edition of The Reality Check, 5 minutes of sanity in an insane world. Please remember, if you're not already an investor with PPS, you can email me directly using mpento@pentoport.com or call the office using 732-772-9500 to get information about our portfolio services. You should also go to Amazon and order my book, The Coming Bond Market Collapse. Subscribers should contact an investment advisor before acting on any information contained in this podcast. No information on this podcast constitutes an offer to sell or buy any financial instruments or to provide any investment services. Subscribers understand there's an inherent risk in investing. PPS is a registered investment advisor.